My boot sank into plush white carpet. The room was large. At the far end, in front of a sheet of tinted bulletproof glass, the bed stood, pristine, swathed in white, and loaded with pillows. The wet bar at the other end, to my left, gleamed with chrome and mirrors. Artful track lighting showed the Bruegel on the far wall next to the bank of television monitors, some showing interior views of the Monde, others showing muted satellite feeds of news channels. The walls were painted white. The smell of hellbreed floated thick and curdled on still air. On the expanse of white carpet, two chairs, recliners in white leather, which brought up the inevitable choice. Did I sit with my back to the door so I could pretend to watch the television images of death, destruction, and hellbreed dancing? Or did I sit with my back to the bulletproof glass and have Perry be the only focus for my eyes?
Choices, choices.
Are you wondering what I'll ask of you tonight?
Safer not to wonder. It's bound to be unpleasant.
If you relaxed a little, you might like it. But tonight, you're going to sit down and have a drink with me.
Oh, Christ. What are we drinking?
Whatever you like. And I am going to have your full attention, Kiss. It's been too long.
Not for me.
Well, sit down. Take a load off. What do you want to drink?
Wonder if I should put a new strategy into play. Make him dictate every damn move. It's worth a try. Where should I sit?
Wherever you like, my dear Kiss. Just take that idiot cuff off. I like to hear your pulse.
I reached down, unbuckled the leather, and slowly drew it off, tucked it in my pocket. The scar tightened deliciously as the air hit it, and I choked back, rising panic.
What's he going to make me do to him this time? The whip again? Or will it be the flechettes? And will I enjoy it?
He liked the pain. And sometimes, dear God, I liked making him bleed. If there was a valley of darkness for hunters, that was it. You can't live with the violence, blood, and screaming for long without getting a taste for vengeance. Every time I made Perry bleed, it felt suspiciously close to justice. It felt good. He leaned in towards my ear. Too close.
Sit down.
His hot, too moist breath brushed heavily and condensed on my skin. I whirled away, my hand closing around the butt of my right-hand gun. I had to work to make my fingers unloose as Perry cocked his head, the light shining off his blonde hair. He held two brandy snifters, an inch of glowing liquid in each.
Oh, come on, Kiss. Tonight's not a night for those games. If you would only relax a little, we could be such good friends.
You are not a friend. You're a hellbreed. Hellspawn. Just one step up from a goddamn Arceus, that's all. One more type of vermin.
And yet you keep coming back.
I made a bargain. One that allows me to hunt more effectively. My fingers managed to avoid his as I took the glass like it was a snake. The silver ring on my left hand spat a single white spark, reacting to his closeness. The carved ruby at the hollow of my throat gave a single reassuring pulse of clean heat.
Mikhail warned you about me.
He did, huh?
Please sit.
Incredibly, he chose the seat with its back to the bulletproof glass, settling down and bringing the bowl of the glass to just under his nose. His eyes half closed. He looked tremendously pleased with himself. I sat in the white leather recliner.
What did Mikhail have to say about me?
He told me you wanted me for reasons of your own, and I'd best remember that. And that a woman always has the edge in this situation.
That nothing you could give me was worth what I'd end up paying for it.
Ooh, you didn't listen to him.
I evaluated the benefits and risk of the bargain.
I'm still alive, aren't I? And still playing patty cake with you. Still coming out ahead by a slim margin, I'd say. Very slim.
Just like a trader.
I'm not a trader. I'm a hunter. And one day, Pericles...
Oh, spare me.
Perry's blue eyes turned dark and thoughtful. I began to feel very uneasy. This wasn't like the usual visit. He would normally be asking me to slip the cuffs on him by now, strapping him into the iron frame.
I find I like you threatening me less and less, Kiss.
Get used to it. Perry's smile was gone. Instead, he studied me with an interested, somber expression for the first time since our initial meeting. It was a good thing I was already sitting down. My knees were weak. I was also starting to sweat. He swirled the liquid in the glass once, precisely, and eyed me.
Oh, I am used to it. I console myself with the thought that eventually you'll beg me. It's only a matter of time.
I decided to go on the offensive. The television monitors glowed, throwing out blue light. On one, grainy footage of a prison riot played. On another, bombs dropped from a plain, sleek silver belly into a verdant green jungle, giving birth to bursts of liquid orange flame. What are you, Perry?
Just a humble hellspawn. Your most respectful servant, Kiss.
His tongue flicked once, shocking wet red. I know better. You don't serve, Perry. You like to think you're the one pulling all the strings, even mine.
There now. I told you you're coming along quite nicely.
I saw Melisande Belisa today. She sends her regards.
I find it extremely unlikely that she mentioned me. It was only a matter of time before her path would cross yours again.
Perry wasn't taking the bait. My mouth was dry. I badly wanted to bolt the brandy. Restrained myself with an effort of will. Sweat slid down the channel of my spine. A cool, tickling finger. You knew she was in town. That's why you were following me. Keeping an eye on your investment.
You're playing blind.
What do you know about this? Dead teenage hookers and something bullets don't even dent, something hellfire doesn't even touch.
Tonight is not for business.
That's part of the bargain, Perry. Your help on the cases I'm working.
And your part of the bargain is time spent with me in the manner I choose, which you are violating, by the way.
What is it this time, Perry? Am I supposed to whip you until you bleed? Or cut you until you feel like you're real? Or, oh, here's a thought. Maybe I should just beat you up, give you a black eye and mar that unpretty face of yours. We could probably sell tickets. I'm sure all your fucking hellspawn friends downstairs would love to see you taken down a peg or two again.
I could simply send a pair of mercenaries to remove your little pussycat from the land of the living. That would, in fact, please me a great deal.
You leave Saul out of this.
I allow you your regrettable taste for bestiality. You will do me the honor of living up to your part of our bargain.
You son of a bitch. Bestiality would be if I was fucking a hellspawn. Something inhuman, like you.
Can you call yourself human after the things you've done? Not to mention the punishment you've meted out to one uncomplaining, passive hellspawn who has done nothing but aid you. Or the countless souls you've sent screaming back to hell.
I do love my work.
But you don't, Kiss. You don't like causing pain. You don't like it when you have to kill. You don't like it when you have to...
I like it just fine.
They were all pregnant, Kismet.
What?
There is much more to this than you think. And I am warning you, my dearest little whore of darkness. Tread carefully. My protection may only extend so far in this matter.
Holy fucking shit. Are you telling me what I think you're telling me?
I am telling you it is possible that I can only protect you so far. Though I have made it adequately clear that you are mine, there are extenuating circumstances.
Extenuating circumstances? Like what? Like you know what's going on? Like you're involved? He began changing shape right before my eyes. Still recognizably Perry, but much handsomer. Higher cheekbones and his mouth ripening. His eyebrows subtly remodeling. Was the blandness a front? Or was this the lie?
You have an hour and 40 minutes left to give me, Kismet. I suggest you rein in your impatience.
His face finished transforming from bland to sharply handsome. Bladed cheekbones and perfect proportions. Subtly wrong, but still attractive.
If you want anything out of me at all, you'd better start talking, Pericles.
Oh, I could speak to you all night. For example, I could begin to extol the virtues of your mouth and move to your eyes, which are charming in their mismatched splendor. Or perhaps I could quote from the Bible. I'm told there is some wonderful poetry in there when one overlooks the rape, pillage, plunder, and murder. Then again, that might appeal to you, Hunter.
Perry stood and crossed the room. He reached down, slipping my untouched brandy glass from my fingers and setting it on the end table. I shivered as he slid his finger across my cheek, tracing the arc of my cheekbone. His fingertips slid over my lips, trailed against my jaw, and brushed down my throat.
Christ, stop it. Make him stop, please. Make him stop.
I clamped down on control, heartbeat, respiration, everything. Tension invaded my body. The scar turned liquid, a traitorous outpost on my own flesh.
He's never done this before.
Another, softer touch brushed my lips. He sipped my breath, and the scar exploded on my wrist, spilling fire through my veins. I spilled off the chair and onto the floor. The riptide of sensation drifted away. My hips tilted up. My heels dug into the ground. The scar burned again.
Oh, no, not again. Please, not again. Please.
This does not have to be so difficult.
Oh, Christ. Christ, help me. Still a whore. Once damned, always damned.
All you must do is give in. I can be forgiving. I can wrap you in silk. I can make your life a series of delights, little one. I can be so kind if you would simply let me. If you would only bend just the smallest bit and let me turn you just a fraction. Just a hair's breadth, not so much at all. You are already so very, very close.
I braced myself against the welter of sensation spilling from the scar's puckered little mouth.
Fuck you! I hate you!
Oh, Kiss. My poor, poor Kismet.
Perry's breath was against my cheek now. Loathsome, oily moisture dewing my skin. The scar began to throb harder.
Why do you force me to be so cruel to you?
Perry's hands tensed against the front of my coat. My head fell back, the ruby at my throat launching a blood-red spark.
Shall I show you what you've been missing?
My hand curled around my knife hilt as he lifted me, the silver ring turning hot against my skin. Hard to think past the spill of desire, the flare of heat as the scar was brushed with a random curl of air. My hips tilted, body convulsing with poison delight. I slashed with all the strength I could find and felt flesh part like water. I looked down to see what Perry had thrown me into, spotting the cracked bedpost. I hauled myself to my feet. The crotch of my leather pants was warm, too warm. The sodden material of my panties rasped against delicate tissues. I was turned on just like the whore I was.
No, the whore I had been. I'm not a working girl anymore.
Not since I'd killed the man who'd turned me out. Not since I'd descended into hell and been pulled back by the first man to ever rescue me. The man who had knelt in front of my death altar, with his hand knotted around the ruby, our mixed blood dyeing the gem and dragging me back into the light. The first man, and only man, who had not seen just my tits and ass, but my anger, my talent, my strength, my reflexes, my ability to become a hunter. I gasped, gathering myself. Hoped like hell Mikhail was right and that I had the advantage here, because it sure as shit didn't feel like it. Perry lifted his bloody fingers to his mouth and delicately licked the black fluid. The cut was low on his belly. I'd scored a good hit.
Another sweet nothing from you.
You do that again, you son of a bitch, and I'll kill you.
Kill me? And your strength is effectively reduced by a few orders of magnitude. I'm the devil, you know. You should treat me better.
I don't care if I go back to being a human hunter. You do that to me again, Pericles, and I will kill you.
I'm only trying to be nice. Wouldn't you like me to be nice? Oh, I can be very, very nice to you.
If you only knew how many times I've heard a man say something similar. Sit the fuck down. Now. I pointed the knife at the chair and Perry moved towards it. He lowered himself down, very slowly. Now, let's get back to business. They were all three pregnant? How the fuck do you know?
Now I have your attention. The sum of your regard. The sunshine of your...
Stop fucking with me, Perry! What do you know about this?
I know they were all pregnant.
And? How do you know anything about this case at all, Perry? How deep are you in? And what the fuck is that thing that nearly killed me?
And nothing more, my dearest whore. Unless you pay me.
Oh, God. In what coin?
You know what I want.
If you are involved with these murders, Perry, I will...
What? Kill me? You've made that threat already. Don't be boring. If I were involved, would I tell you anything? Besides, there are some things even I will not stoop to profit from, but you should beware. My protection, as I've said, may only extend so far. But you could have all my protection, and so much more besides. Sit down, Kiss. No more of this tonight. Though I do love to hear you whimper.
Go to hell.
Oh, no. I like it here ever so much better. Sit down, my dear. In a little while, I'll fetch another drink.
My breath turned harsh in my throat, but he kept his eyes closed. The black blood stopped soaking through his clothes and the scar didn't erupt on my wrist. He tilted his head back against the white leather of the recliner. Christ, Perry. You kept trying to make me react by making me hurt you, and now you pulled this? The thought that Perry might have figured out a way to make me react the way he wanted was chilling, to say the least. It meant I would have to find a whole new way to relate to the bargain I'd made. A whole new way to deal with him.
Like I don't have enough problems.
Or maybe he was just moving in on me because I was vulnerable. Because this case was bothering me more than I wanted to admit. I lowered myself down in the chair opposite him, the knife's blade throwing back colored light. Blue from the TV screens, red from the glare in the bulletproof window, gold from the track lighting.
One day, Kiss, you will have to face just how much like me you can become before you give in.
You can't turn me, Pericles.
I don't have to. You'll turn yourself, given enough time. Now be quiet. I want to listen to you breathe.
All semblance of life left Perry, draining away until he was only an icon painted on the white leather of the chair. A black splashed icon with his arm clamped against his side. The silver content in my knife must have hurt like a mad bastard even as it healed. For the first time, we sat there, Perry and I, and he didn't speak. Neither did I. And when the 2 hours were up, I left. The reinforced heavy bag swung. Its scuffed red sides repaired with tape several times. They were combinations Mikhail had taught me. Sweat began to drip down my spine, my arms, my legs. I could feel him with me.
Use it, use it, use it! That is best friend right there. Should be able to do this in sleep, Mariah. Use it! Hurt it! Kill it! Do it!
The blood seeping from the broken skin over my knuckles would grind the rim Mickey had given me when he'd accepted me as an apprentice.
Throw elbow, solid, tight enough. Hit so they know they've been hit. Not like that. Cthulhu's fucking head, tighten up. Work it, work it, work it.
The years of training peeled away until I was the girl standing on the street corner again. Cold wind against the backs of my bare legs as the cars crept by, each with its cargo of hungry-eyed men. The mousy little brown-eyed, skinny-legged, smart-ass girl. Not me. Not Jill Kismet, kick-ass bitch. Not me. Not anymore. I looked down at my throbbing hands, sweat soaking through my clothes as the broken skin on my knuckles melded together, painfully, twitching as it healed. What the? It was the east door, the front door, the only door that gave onto the street. I'd left it unlocked because I'd been going so fast. Stealthy movement in the hall. Probably human. I whirled, gun coming up.
Jill, wait!
Standing at the end of the hall, the front door open behind her, was a thin, brown-haired girl with a terrific bruise spreading up the side of her face. I had to look under the split lip and the bruise before I recognized her. She had her hands up, a battered backpack hanging off her thin shoulder. Her legs were bruised and battered too. A short pink skirt and a green sweater with holes in it completed the picture of a woman at the end of her goddamn rope.
You know what it feels like, don't you, Jill?
Oh, Jesus. What the fuck are you doing here? Her face crumpled a little. Her big brown eyes were the size of dinner plates, and they welled with silent, brimming tears.
My name is Cecilia. Can you help me?
I checked Cecilia for needle marks, for the nasal deterioration that would mean coke, for the smell of burnt metal that means meth. She looked pretty clean, other than the familiar tang of weed and beer. She was also so painfully thin, I wasn't surprised as she stuffed herself with leftover penne and steak. I poured myself a double jigger of scotch.
I am drinking too goddamn much. Go easy on that, Cecilia. Don't get all bulimic.
Cecilia gave me a pitiful, owlish look, and I immediately felt like the biggest bitch in the universe. I poured her a glass of orange juice and looked at the clock.
3:30 in the morning. How long has she been sitting outside waiting for me? One shoddy human, and I didn't notice? Am I slipping? Then again, I'm tuned to notice things like Arceus and traitors trying to ambush me. Not one skanked out little girl. You're Ricky's number one, aren't you? His head girl?
I met him when I was in high school.
Honey, it's all the same story, getting into that life. Don't need to hear it. Now, what's going on? Did Ricky bust you up?
Yeah.
Because?
I know some things.
No shit. But what are you doing at my door, woman? Like what? What do you know?
I knew baby Jewel. And sweet Sylvie. There's... You know, an awful lot of the girls have gone missing lately. It's hard to keep track of the people. They move in and out. Some of them go north on the circuit. Some go back east. It's just really hard.
I know what that's like.
They've been going missing for a while. There were whispers before. But it's been really bad since spring. When the rain moved in that one week and we had flash floods.
I remembered there had been people caught in the floods.
How bad?
Bad enough that the girls are starting to get desperate. They...
Go on. Believe me, kid. Nothing you could say could shock me.
I've probably done it all twice if it's human, or killed it at least once if it's Nightside.
They won't get into cars with a trick they don't know. Everyone's trying to body up to get a good look at the last trick anyone else goes with. But it's hard. And there's been... Well... Betty Stride disappeared, and Mercy, and Lucy Long, and Star, and Hope, and Alexis. And these are all girls who wouldn't leave the city. But the worst of it is, If a girl gets pregnant, she vanishes.
Pregnant. Even with condoms and spermicide, it happened. Not a lot of working girls could afford the pill, or could remember to take it every morning. And then there were pimps and tricks who paid more for skin jobs. An occupational hazard in the sex trade.
How many pregnant girls are there on the strip now?
Not a lot. They all keep disappearing.
Pregnant hookers. Pregnant women, with all their organs gone. And their eyes. I frowned at my glass, seeing the amber liquid inside swirl gently as my attention touched it. And those marks. Too clean and sharp to be claw marks. Scalpel cuts. The scar on my wrist throbbed under the leather cuff. My back ran with goose flesh. Profit incentive.
There are some things even I will not stoop to profit from.
What if one of those things is the sale of bodily organs and stem cells?
She is attempting an evocation, Hunter. She is fueling it with death and acquiring funding from the sale of bodily...
I'd shot Belisa because I thought she was trying to mindfuck me. What if she was trying to do it with the truth? Well, this just keeps getting better.
Cecilia pushed her stool back and dug in her backpack as I watched. She came up with a thick wad of crumpled, dirty bills. She laid it on the counter between us.
I've got $2,000 in cash. Most of it's mine, but 500's from Ricky's stash. If I go back, he won't just beat me up, he'll mark my face. He's done it before. Maybe even kill me. Can I? I mean, they said you could help people. Can you help me?
Those little words. Those little magic words. Can you help me? You're my only hope. Help me. Please. For the love of God, help me. Of all the words a hunter hears, those are the most common. And those were the words that drag us in again and again.
Well, we sure as hell aren't in it for the money, are we? You want out of the life? You get one fucking chance, doll. One. You fuck up with any help I give you and you're on your own. I don't care how you got on the street. If you're determined, you'll get the help you need to stay off. But don't fuck with me.
You think I don't know that? There's stories about you, you know? All sorts of stories. Ricky calls you a witch.
Not a witch. Exorcist, sorceress, and tainted with hellbreed, but not a witch. Don't let that concern you, though. You're better off not knowing. Okay. I'm gonna clean up a little, and then we're gonna have a nice long chat. Then I'll call a friend of mine who might be able to give you a safe place to stay until all this is over. But I warn you, you better not fuck with anyone I call for you. No drugs, no tricks, no nothing. Strictly legit. You got it?
I got it.
Cecilia, you got a last name?
Markham.
Well, Miss Markham, you're officially under my protection as a witness. I'm gonna go get cleaned up. There's more juice in the fridge. And put that cash away. You'll need it to start a new life.
The way her pinched, bruised, split little face lit up, I couldn't help feeling better. I didn't call Galena. I had already dumped one witness on her. Instead, I called Avery and wished Saul had a cell phone. Then again, if he was down in the barrio, he didn't need any distraction. He'd catch up with me soon enough. Ave promised to drop by and pick up the girl as soon as he could, which meant 3 hours since he was on his Sunday overnight shift. One of those hours I spent questioning her. She was bright and relatively observant, and living on the street had fine-tuned her instinct for what was bullshit and what was truth left unsaid. What Cecilia could tell me was almost as interesting as what she couldn't. The doctor on Kinkoa, Krikowitz, had been taking care of street girls as a profitable side gig for a long time now. Recently, though, whispers had started. The flesh gallery was alive with rumors because girls that told their running mates or co-workers that they had a little trouble started disappearing. And the girls that visited the doctor came back with appointments to see him again, but never got there.
It's not just girls. Some of the street kids, the young ones, get taken too. And some of the older rummies on the street have started to talk about seeing weird things.
What do you mean, weird things?
I don't know. I've heard everything from UFOs to Sasquatch. Real crazy shit.
If other people had seen what Robbie the Juicer had seen, no wonder the street scene was boiling with rumor. The most interesting piece of news was the pimps all getting together after I'd put the squeeze on Ricky. A meet was something that only happened in dire circumstances, thanks to the egos of the petty thugs involved. There was always fresh meat. But one or two of the Flash boys had been grumbling about something cutting into their profit by picking off the girls. Ricky had thrown a fit. But he was small fry, even though his girls had some prime real estate. Another pimp, a heavy-set black man with gold-capped front teeth who went by the name of Jonte, had told everyone to shut up, because they would be getting paid plenty. He'd told Ricky in no uncertain terms that the little shit hadn't been let in on the action because he couldn't keep his mouth shut. Ricky had gotten fresh and got bitch-smacked for his pains, which explained why the smacking had devolved onto Cecilia, incidentally. And then there was the bombshell. The meeting had also been attended by a representative from the local mob, Jimmy Rocadero, with two bodyguards. Beyond supporting Jonte's claim that the pimps would be paid plenty for going along with the program, Rocadero hadn't said much, but his mere presence had scared some of the smaller fish in the pond. Every pimp in Santa Luz paid a percentage to the mob. It was just how business is done.
Cecilia, do you know if the strip clubs are having similar turnover?
I don't know. I never did the strips. By the time I was old enough, I was already turned out for Ricky.
Once I'd had a chance to back-teen the worst of her scrapes, apply a few band-aids, and get the swelling down with some arnica, Cecilia no longer looked even 18. Instead, she looked 12. A very frightened 12. She curled up on my couch with a battered teddy bear she'd fished out of her backpack and jumped at the slightest noise. She had nothing but short skirts and hot pants in her backpack, so I'd rustled up a pair of paint-splattered sweats for her. I sat on the floor, cross-legged in leather pants and a Prospero's Housewives t-shirt. There was nothing I could do right at the moment except get every scrap of information I could from this girl. I took a closer look at her. She'd been pretty, and bright enough to escape getting hooked on something deadly. I pegged her as smart, but terribly needy, probably a cheerleader in high school with some bad home life that she thought running away would save her from.
Like looking into a fucking mirror, isn't it, Jill? So why did you bail out on Ricky?
I...
You're pregnant? Okay. Please tell me you haven't been out to Kinkoa.
I haven't. But Ricky called the doctor to make the appointment for me. I said I wouldn't go.
That's when he got all nasty on you.
I told him I'd go after he hit me. But I... There are people who know stuff. I went to this head shop on Salvador Avenue. I told them I was looking for you. That I needed help. The woman there said to come here. I walked the whole way.
And if I checked my messages, I'd probably have heard one from Jordan, letting me know someone in need was heading my way. Damn it. All right. The best thing to do... Oh, shit. I sense something. Big.
The sensation of danger was immediate, palpable, and hair-raising. My head snapped up. My right hand automatically blurred for a gun.
Jill? What's going on?
Get up.
What's happened? What's going on?
Get the fuck up! Come on!
She flinched, her eyes getting even rounder as she saw the gun. I stalked for the recliner by the small table where I did tarot card readings, scooped up my battered leather coat, and shrugged into it, passing the gun from hand to hand.
Something's coming. I just heard it. It'll trip the first line of defenses and alarms around my house in, 90 seconds. You don't think I'd sit in here helpless, do you? Move, girl! You're gonna play mousy and hide in the hole.
The little hidey hole was in the bedroom, where the mixed scent of Ware and Hellbreed Hunter would help mask her fear and human smell.
Up the ladder. Go.
It was probably a good thing Cecilia was trained to immediate obedience, even if I could have cheerfully ripped Diamond Ricky's nuts off for the beating he'd given an underweight girl. Pull the ladder up. Now close that fucking trapdoor and lock it. Stay up there until I come and get you, or until dawn. If it takes me out, go to the precinct house on Alameda and ask for Montaigne. He'll take care of you. I know you don't like cops, but he's all right.
But what about you?
Don't worry about me. Now close that door and lock it, bitch. I'd also wanted the bedroom for the extra ammo stash. I loaded up on silver-jacketed lead. Each full magazine slid into the loop sewn in my coat. Better to have the ammo and not need it, especially if what I had in mind didn't work. I wished I could use the bullwhip, but that was for traitors. The little distance a thin bit of leather would give me, critical for facing down a full hellbreed, wasn't going to be any fucking help against something this fast. I ran for the practice room. God damn! Looks like I've got company. I judged the amount of time it had taken for the thing to reach the warehouse. Maybe they let it out in Percoa Park, or down on the collar somewhere. Didn't your mother ever teach you to knock? I ran along the side of the room toward the long shape lying under its fall of amber silk on the far back wall. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in! There, humming with malignant force, was the long, fluidly carved iron staff, a slim dragon head at either end. I tore the leather cuff from my right wrist, feeling the shock as air hit suddenly sensitive skin. I felt the humming of etheric force begin to cascade around me as my right hand closed around the staff's slim length. The iron burned, pain jolting up my arm. Thou shalt serve me. By the grace of the destroyer, thou shalt serve me. The staff subsided as I lifted it down, my knuckles white against its oiled metal gleam. It had tested my will only once, in a massive struggle inside a consecrated circle. The final test before my hell descent, before I was a full-fledged hunter in my own right. My hands tightened. I tested the heft. The dragon heads clove the air. Then I gathered myself and ran for the front door. I stopped in the living room. The staff held slightly tilted in front of me, both hands aching where they gripped its coldness. Then it began to warm. The scar on my wrist turned hot and hard again.
Come to mama, you hunk of shit.
The creature slammed through the crumbling wall. The staff jerked up in my hands, coming alive. Deadly curved blades sprung from the two dragon heads' mouths. The blades cut the air, the complicated double eight pattern becoming a blur of motion. The thing came for me, a faint silver glimmer showing at its low, unhealthy neck. Smashed into me, the low, fluid, somehow wrong shape that my eyes hurt straining to see. The staff jerked in my hands, supple and alive, singing its silent song of bloodlust as it clove both air and preternatural skin. Fur flew. The gagging stench of it enveloped me. If you can't breathe, you can't fight. But I was going to give it the old college try. Something black and foul exploded, and the cold smacked through me. A cold like a razor burn with the bile in my throat. It was a good thing I hadn't eaten anything because the scotch boiled in my stomach looking to escape the hard way. And as always, when the staff was in my hands and time blurred around me, I felt it. The cold, clear chill of the world falling into place. Everything stark and simple.
Kill or be killed.
The creature's retching breath plumed in the frozen air as the staff executed a complex maneuver. The creature came at me again. It was vaguely humanoid despite the claws, which careened off one blade. The creature backed up. I felt crazed, almost twitching in my eagerness to kill, ice painting the air as my breath froze. It was human-shaped. And I was so far gone by then that I peered underneath its scrim of hair in blinding blur. Only for a moment, trying to decipher the silver glimmer at its throat.
A chain? A leash?
It backed up again, holding its front left limb up as if I'd wounded it. Black sludge ran from it and down to the floor, smoking in the cold.
Kill it! Kill it!
A sudden bolt of blue hellfire lanced through the shattered air, smashing against the thing's side.
Where the hell did that come from?
It streaked away through the hole in the wall it had created, its gait now uneven. The scar turned hot and hard. I felt Perry like a storm front moving through, a change of pressure that meant lightning. But that wasn't what made me freeze. I whirled on the balls of my feet to meet this new threat. Standing amid the shattered wreckage, his eyes dark and infinite, Saul shoved his hands deep in his coat pockets and regarded me. Steam drifted up from his skin. The couch was a shambled mess. The kitchen was torn all to hell. Every mirror and window in the place was shattered and crusted with ice. And still, my hands tightened on the staff. What civilization the staff was an artifact of, I didn't know. Mikhail hadn't known either. But ever since that highly advanced people had shaped this length of steel into a long wand with stylized dragon heads at either end, and don't ask me how we know they're dragon heads, we just do. It has been used for one thing. Bloodshed. Destruction.
The secret to handling it has been passed down from hunter to hunter in an unbroken line since its creation.
I had no reason to disbelieve Mikhail. Once, and only once, I think I saw what the world had looked like when the staff was created. The fact that I wasn't howlingly insane meant I had passed the test and was ready to descend into hell and come back a full hunter. The terrible battle began. Me trying to wrench my fingers free of the iron. The staff needing to be set free. To whistle through the air again. To cleave flesh and anything harder, anything at all. To maim and rip and tear. I noticed a trickle of hot blood run down my side. Down my arm and leg. From my left shoulder. Turned into hamburger by the thing's claws. The staff tore free, taking the skin on my palms with it, and launched across the room towards the wall. It stuck there, sunk 6 inches into the concrete. I swayed, suddenly aware that I had been moving in ways a human body hadn't been designed to move. Even one with the help of a chunk of meteoric, pre-Atlantean steel, and a hellbreed scar on one wrist. Everything hurt. A scalding, fiery pain. Suddenly, I sensed someone else moving towards me.
And it ain't Saul.
My nails tore through Perry's face, the scar on my wrist giving an agonized flare of pleasure. Then Saul had me in his arms, holding me tight as I struggled. He took my legs out from under me. We hit the ground among debris and melting ice. I struggled, getting wood dust, glass, plaster, water, all sorts of crap in my hair before Saul buried his face in my throat. And I went utterly still. The sharp edges of Saul's teeth could open my carotid in a moment.
Jill. It's over. It's over.
I passed out. I woke up with one hell of a hangover. Using the staff does that. It's not something to be done lightly, as Mikhail had reminded me until he was blue in the face. But really, I was just happy it had worked. I opened my eyes and saw something hazy that qualified, maybe, as light. Immediately, someone slid an arm under my head and held the foulest concoction in the whole wide goddamn world to my lips. The best cure for a bad case of overstrain goes like this. Nuke room-temperatured Coke until you get the fizzies out. About 10 seconds in the microwave under frost will do it. Then mix it half and half with Gatorade. You dump about a quarter of it,
and fill up the huge old mug with very strong valerian tea. Mikhail always used to spike it with a little vodka, but he was crazy. It works. The Gatorade balances your electrolytes. The caffeine and sugar in the Coke bring your blood levels back up, and the nixed carbonation settles the stomach. And the valerian, if strong enough, is almost as good as Valium to calm down a hunter who's just gone through the ringer. The vodka, of course, was because nothing medicinal could be without a touch of that finest of elixirs.
Shit!
I took down 4 mugs of it before I reached my limit.
I've had enough, Saul! Get this shit away from me!
Calm down, or I'll strap you down, goddammit, you stupid bitch.
Fuck you!
I told you to fucking stay with Perry!
He's right. And he has a right to be furious. The civilian, where is she?
She's okay. She's with Avery. Just settle down, Jill. Come on. I told you to stay with Perry.
I couldn't.
I guess not. What did he do to you?
The usual mind fucks. Just stay with me, Saul.
I'm not going anywhere. You want more backlash, Brew?
Shit, no. What'd you find out?
Interesting stuff. Just rest for now, though, okay? I'll kick your ass later.
Promises, promises.
When I surfaced a second time, I felt better. The brew had done its work, and my head no longer felt like something monstrous was trying to birth itself from the center of my brain. Late afternoon sunlight fell in through the window. Saul was a warm weight on the other side of the bed. His dark head rested on his arm, because, as usual, he'd thrown off the covers and ditched his pillow. Unlike usual, however, he was clothed, boxers and a t-shirt. I sat up slowly. My head felt tender, and my body was a little sore. But other than that, I felt surprisingly good. Good thing, too. I'd wasted enough time and needed to get back on my feet. First order of business is to get that goddamn doctor and throttle him until he squeals. And then, a quick visit to Jimmy Rocadero and...
And where do you think you're going?
Hey, baby. How are you?
Pissed as hell. How you feeling, kitten?
Okay. Not gonna be running a marathon anytime soon, but I can work. Saul...
God damn it, Kiss. I told you to stay with Perry.
I told you, Saul. I couldn't.
What did he do to you? Huh? What did he do to you?
What didn't he do? Nothing. Just... nothing. Mindfuck, like usual. There's a reason why I don't want to stay there when he's finished with me. Last night it was bad.
2 nights ago.
2? I've been out that long?
Yeah. Perry's been putting the house back together. Avery has the girl. There are 3 more bodies. I've got files.
Wonderful. A little light reading for the car ride. I got things to do. We have to get to that doctor, and Jimmy Rocadero...
Rocadero? He's one of the bodies, kitten. And I want to make it abundantly clear to you how fucking unhappy I am with the chain of events that ended up with you here, facing that thing alone with no fucking backup. Very, very fucking clear.
Rocadero's dead?
Straight up dead. But he's still got his internal organs. They're just... all spread over his goddamn house. I also found out a few things in the barrio.
Saul's fingers flicked, and the length of cluttered leather braid and obsidian arrowhead dangled. A venomous dart of blue light splintered from the arrowhead.
I found out what this is. Go wash up, then we'll talk. And don't ever do that again. I dropped by here to pick up fresh clothes and ammo for you so we could track down the leads I found straight from the barrio. Imagine my surprise at finding Perry and that... goddamn thing here before me.
Perry was here? What the hell was he doing here so late? Protecting his investment?
He'd just arrived. I saw him coming down the street. That thing was tearing up the inside of the house. We came in and saw you beating the shit out of it. You looked... well...
I winced. With a staff in my hands, I probably looked feral. My hair standing on end as I moved in ways a human body shouldn't.
I looked horrible, right?
Deadly. Beautiful. Jesus Christ, Jillian. You could have died.
I had to.
For one of Diamond Ricky's girls?
Just a whore, right? Just another teenage hooker on the cold street.
A civilian. She asked for my help.
And those are the magic words, aren't they? Well, I need your goddamn help, too.
Please, baby, don't do this now.
Saul.
You listen to me. You end up dead, and you know what happens to me? Do you?
A were dies when his mate does. But I'm not were. I'm human. Fucked up with Hellbreed, but still human.
Saul...
I put up with Perry. I put up with you throwing yourself into every goddamn mess in this city, but goddammit, Jillian. I do not want to lose you.
Saul.
I want you to meet my people. I want you under the moon with me.
Holy Christ.
That's serious.
Very serious. As serious as it can get. Now, you need a shower?
You offering to seduce me?
I'd love to. But duty calls. Hurry up.
Where in the barrio did you go?
Couple of places. But I found what I needed in a little bar off Santa Croce. A real dive. You'd love it.
Saul was already on his way to the closet. I looked down at the bedsheet. I'd bled on it from the wounds that were now pink scars, rapidly fading.
That thing marked me up a couple of times. Left side of my ribs, shoulder, leg. Oh, I'm lucky to be alive.
I suppose the bar was a smelly place full of nasty characters.
Just like usual, baby. You've broadened my social horizons, that's for sure.
Saul opened the closet door, and I spent a few moments in artistic appreciation of his boxer-clad ass before I stood.
There's work to be done.
Yeah?
I called Hutch from the cordless in the bedroom, but he had still not had any luck digging up whatever chucharak meant. I was beginning to think it was a dead end, just like St. Anthony's spear.
Guy and I are gonna have a little talk about lying to hunters. Just as soon as I have some fucking time.
Hutch did have other news, though.
Hey, it's the end of the Sorrow's 3-year cycle this year.
3.7. So they're in the dark time now.
Looks like it. No, if you ask me, those motherfuckers are always at 13 o'clock. So, the dark time. Cleansing within houses, hunting down apostates, and evocations of the Elder Gods.
Evocations? That rings a bell. Wait a second. What did you say?
Miguel de Ferrar says it's SOP for a house to evoke their patron elder at this time. Lots of demonic activity, that sort of thing. It's when they believe the veil between this world and the world of the demons gets real thin, like Samhain for witches.
So, what's necessary for an evocation of this magnitude? Say, if a Sara was doing it alone.
They can't do it alone. That's why houses are collective. It takes a full house to hold a door in the world open for an elder to reach through even briefly. We're talking granite floors carved with the 9 seals. Perfect tallow candles, velvet robes, amber grease, and amber incense. The whole 9. The whole 9, including gold laid in the circle for the elder, the sacrifice, and the psychic energy needed to rip a hole in the ether.
She's attempting an evocation, Hunter. She is fueling it with death and acquiring funding from the sale of bodily... So it's a massive financial as well as sorceress effort. Hutch, what's the market like in Santa Luz for black market organs?
Organs? What kind of...
Human organs. Kidneys, livers, that sort of thing. Stem cells, too.
Well, I don't know. But I can find out. 5 minutes on the internet...
Never mind. Listen, which patron elder rules the end of this cycle? I know each house has their special dedication, but which one of the 99 rules this particular cycle in general?
I just had it. I just had a copy of Louvrienne's Chaldeans open. Ah, here we are. Let's see. If we calculate from the Chaldean calendar, carry the 1, leap years, the Gregorian. Okay, this year's winner is... Whoa, shit.
What?
It's the Nameless. And the cycle ends in 4 days.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. The Nameless?
Destroyer of babies, eater of worlds, he who rewards...
Shut up, Hutch. I know the titles. Listen to me. Leave the bookstore right now. Go over to Galena's. Stay there until I come and get you. Take the Louvrienne and Defar with you. I might call there, okay?
Oh, God, what have you gotten me into now?
I haven't gotten you into anything, stupid. I just want you safe. Better safe than eviscerated.
Get my drift?
Oh, shit. Jill, I hate you.
Galena will be glad to see you.
Ugh, you bitch. I'll leave everything locked. If you come in, try not to burn the place down, okay?
Hutch! I wouldn't ever burn down a bookstore. Jeez, what kind of hunter do you think I am?
One who's made it her personal mission to get me into trouble. Bye, Jilly.
Don't call me that. I stared at the cradled phone.
Holy fuck. The Nameless. Why would Asaro break away from her house and do an evocation? It makes no sense.
There was one person who could explain it. The catch, of course, was if I could trust her explanation. Saul stood by the window, the tiny bottle of holy water on its silver chain at his chest glittered, throwing darts of hard light from the glass.
All right, Jill, think. What pattern do we have here? Having a pattern is the first step. If what I was suspecting was really going down, why hadn't there been bodies showing up earlier? Or if there were bodies, where were they now?
I didn't have enough pieces of the puzzle to make a pattern I was happy with, logic-wise. Once Saul told me what the arrowhead was, I would have a little more, hopefully. And that thing, the clawed and furred thing that I couldn't quite get a mental picture of, no matter how hard I concentrated.
What does that have to do with it? Is it a piece of Chaldean sorcery I haven't seen before?
It wasn't exactly likely, given the study of the sorrows I'd done. But was the furry thing the Chucharak? If it was, and Belisa and the Yungo Sorrow were fleeing it...
No, that doesn't make any sense. Is the furry stinky thing unrelated to the murders? But its smell was gagging strong over the scenes.
That didn't necessarily mean they were related.
Does it?
I coiled the bullwhip at my side, checked my guns, my knives, and shrugged into my coat. I caught a fading whiff of iron pre-Atlantean bloodlust and furry stink on the tattered leather. Saul?
Yeah?
It's time. You can tell me what that thing is.
Come on out into the kitchen first.
Why?
You need breakfast. And Perry's here.
What? He's still here?
Of course he's still here. He's patched up the windows and everything. He thinks he should shadow you until this is over. I happen to agree.
What? You're telling me that he left the Monde Nuit and he's in our kitchen and you want him to stay there?
I want him to stick around. You're safer with both of us looking after you.
Saul!
I found out what this arrowhead means, kitten. And believe me, you don't want any of it.
Well, spill it.
Come on into the kitchen and I will. I'll make you breakfast and we'll strategize.
Wait just a goddamn minute. You don't like it when I visit him, whether to track down a hellbreed or to pay my dues for the bargain I made. What the hell are you doing playing patty cake with him now?
If he's going to help you get your stubborn ass through this in one piece, I don't care. This is bad, Kiss. As bad as you think it is, it's worse.
Why? What is that thing?
Come out, have some breakfast, and I'll tell you. Then you can decide what you're going to do.
Shit.
There. Eat.
I eyed the table in front of me. There were eggs, pancakes, bacon, coffee, an English muffin, another plate of eggs with hollandaise, and a peach, cut up carefully and decoratively. Nothing experimental, and nothing fancy. For Saul, this was the culinary equivalent of a polite non-answer to a question that hadn't even been asked. Perry hunched on the stool at the end of the kitchen counter, his gray suit sharply and immaculately creased. He seemed not to like the sunlight falling through the windows, and I was secretly glad. For all that, his hair glowed and his eyes burned blue, and the warehouse, while smelling of hellbreed, was neat and repaired, the ice gone, every inch of glass swept up and new panes put in, the wood fused back together, shattered furniture either patched up or replaced. It was a massive expenditure of cash and sorcerous power, and one I wasn't quite sure I liked the thought of incurring. I finished examining my plate and glanced at Perry.
Don't worry, Kiss. Saul and I negotiated terms. This doesn't enter into our bargain.
Is that so? I tried not to look relieved. Tried also not to feel a little wriggle of panic that he had guessed what I was thinking.
I picked up a piece of bacon.
Well, care to clue me in, Saul?
Saul leaned against the counter on the other side, and I realized he was keeping Perry in the corner of his eye.
I found out what our hairy little friend is. You want the bad news or the bad news first?
Just tell me something. I'm getting impatient.
It's a Wendigo.
You're kidding.
They're not myths. I wish to Christ they were. I had to take the arrowhead to a moonspeaker in the barrio, an old one. She'd seen a Wendigo before and remembered the smell. She said it was a Hunda Ai, part of a fetish meant to control or create a Wendigo. The sight of it turned her into a sobbing heap, and her mate nearly had my liver in lights for upsetting her. I ended up at a little bar with a were-spider. She'd actually hunted a Wendigo up Canada way. She started to shake while she talked about it.
Saul's eyes were as dark and serious as I'd ever seen them. I glanced at Perry. He stared into the coffee cup, his face arranged in a mask of bland interest. All the same, he looked miserable. My blue eye twinged a little. I could see the edges of his aura fringing a little bit, wearing down. Maybe our favorite hellbreed didn't like being out during the day. I was suddenly immensely cheered by the thought. Inside his jacket, pants, and open-collared crisp white shirt, he looked almost normal and profoundly uncomfortable.
Don't fall for that, sweetheart. It's just another dirty little facade. If Saul wasn't here, we'd see a different Perry indeed.
Wendigo! A flesh-eating spirit with its lips and nose frozen off? Come on, Saul.
Jillian, if you don't cut the crap, I'm gonna take your breakfast back and drag you into the sparring room and make you wash the goddamn blood off the goddamn sheets, too. Look at your coat. This is no fucking laughing matter. A Wendigo is something else. It's a spirit made mad by neglect and violence. A spirit that has done what is taboo. Tasted human flesh, developed a craving for it.
A were spirit? That thing wasn't a were. I know weres.
It's not were. It's a spirit we know about. A totally different kettle of fish. Some of the legends say there may be weres dying without burial rites, or a were who is taboo in life. I don't know. The legends are confused. It's not like hunting scurf. Where's no scurf? These things... humans might get confused about them. But whatever they are, they're not where.
Oh, Jesus. This is a lot to absorb.
Really, dear Kiss, you should listen to Furball here. He knows more than you think. After all, he didn't go into the barrio to seek facts. He went to confirm.
You suspected it all along, Saul?
I didn't know. Until I knew for sure, I didn't want to open my mouth and muddy the trail.
Well, that's why you're my partner. So, you're absolutely satisfied that this thing is a Wendigo?
I'd bet my life on it.
It's not your life we'll be betting. It's mine. Whatever it is, I'm taking it down. What kills a Wendigo?
I don't know yet. The legends are confused. The were-spider was part of a team that tracked one of those things for 15 weeks, through a few snowstorms, and finally killed it by driving it off the edge of a crevasse and dynamiting a mountainside down on it. The creature and the dynamiting combined to knock out most of her team.
Were-spiders aren't known for being pack animals. Like were-cats, they tend to be independent, loosely affiliated in tribes rather than in pack groups. Except were-lions, of course. Always excepting were-lions. Some bird wares are highly social, as are most of the canine wares, except the occasional albino shaman. Then there are the caproom and the scorpiani, who some sources said weren't wares at all. Not to mention the centauri and the were-rats, who are highly social and stratified to a fault. The were-rats, incidentally, are the closest in physiology and outlook to humans. Nobody but me usually sees the humor in that.
How many in the team?
14. The spider and a were-leopard made it back. The were-leopard died of mate sickness 2 months after. His mate was lost in the dynamiting. If they hadn't been out in the middle of nowhere, the casualties might have been higher. Humans and such.
Crap. An evocation in 4 days. Bodies being dumped, clean of organs.
Saul, where are the autopsy files?
Got them right here.
I wonder how much other body mass was lost. Muscle, specifically.
Belly muscle was gone on the ones we saw. Some bites on the thighs and the arms, too. But Rocodero wasn't found with his organs gone.
Given his proclivities, I'm not sure his own side didn't murder him. One of the traditional evocations of the Nameless is done with perfect tallow candles. Victim's omentums would be perfect for that. All you'd need is a place to render it down. This is gonna be a messy one. How about Rocodero gets sliced because he's no longer useful?
How so?
Let me pass this theory by you. Asaro escapes. She decides, for whatever reason, that she's feeling a little apocalyptic. She starts laying her plans and moves into Santa Luz, finds a mob man, and starts supplying him with black market organs, taking a healthy cut to fund her dreams of world domination. She gets the organs out with the help of a trained doctor, our friend, Krakowitz. Then she throws whatever bit she doesn't need to the Wendigo, who sits in the van and snacks until she needs to get rid of an inconvenient hunter. Only why does she start dumping pregnant hookers?
Once pregnant hookers.
They were still pregnant when they were killed.
We don't know that. They were visiting an abortionist.
Thanks for putting my house back together, Pericles. Why did you follow me?
The cat wasn't at the moon to pick you up. I thought you might be in a state to harm yourself.
Well, isn't that decent of you?
Fetal tissue, maybe? Valuable stuff to the right buyer.
Oh, yuck. That's a wonderful thought to go with my breakfast.
Troubled by a delicate stomach, my kismet.
Our first stop is this Krakowitz. If he's not in his office, I want to tear the goddamn place apart until we find something. Anything. I want to get Karp and Rosie to start leaning on the organ trade in town. And I want to find Melisande Belisa. She knows something. And once we get our hands on her, I want to make her squeal. You ever menaced a sorrow before, Perry?
They don't like Hellbreed, and with good reason. If you will agree to stay in my sight until this matter is finished, I will agree to find this sorrow and make her fit her name.
I thought your protection only extended so far.
That was before you were attacked in your own home, Kiss. All bets, as they say, are now off. I'm going to go repair some of the holes in the living room walls. Call me if anything interesting happens.
Oh, I don't like this. Perry shows up just in time, both times. I dragged Elizondo in on a slave ring charge, and he was in the Monday after we scorched that hole on North Locado. And now this organ thing, and a Wendigo? Saul, you're sure? Absolutely sure?
100%. The truly bad news is I don't know if we can kill it. It's a spirit, kitten. Hunger incarnate, hunger distilled. It's taboo. Not a real physicality at all now. Just appetite and ice.
It cut me. If it can cut, it can be cut. There's nothing out there so bad it can't be killed. Except for maybe a god, but we're not facing one of those. Not for 4 days, at least. What can you tell me about a Wendigo? How they're created, what can kill them, that sort of thing.
Not much, but I can get in touch with someone who knows more.